Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I am playing an interview I did with Barry Ayres, who makes his living and his life singing, dancing, acting, writing, choreographing, directing. If it has to do with the theater, Barry does it, and has been doing it essentially since he's been 2 years old. This is a story of a guy who came in with what he was going to make his life of, and never looked back. It's a delightful story. It's an interesting story. It's not a simple story, but it's compelling. So hang on. Here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down you dive, where the child's gone to survive, finding wisdom's other words. Oh, you really can. And it's always there, like a silent hug from no.
Welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is all about living the life you were meant to live. I believe that we are born with natural inclinations, with natural talents, skills, abilities, natural ways in which we see the world, and that depending on how our naturalness is experienced by our family, our culture, our peers, our school, depending on how that naturalness is either accepted or not accepted, encouraged or discouraged, applauded, enjoyed, or we are made to feel embarrassed by it, depending on how that naturalness is responded to by our environment, that is what determines how closely we can use, how closely we can come, that's what I mean, how closely we can come to being who we really are. This isn't going to come as a surprise to most of you. For a very long time, it was thought that being left-handed was somehow something of the devil. So that even people who were naturally left-handed, that was what their the configuration of their brain asked for, were forced to use their right hand. this is a glaring physical example of what I'm talking about, which happens more subtly and generally more psychologically. In the same way that some of us come into the world wanting to naturally use our left hand to pick up the fork, to pick up the pen, that's our dominant hand, right? Some of us seem to have a facility for music, or art, or dance, or humor, or sports, or ideas, or intellectual pursuits. Some of us have a natural capacity to do numbers. Some of us have a natural capacity to be peacemakers. Some of us, well, all of us. This is what I think. This is what I like to say. I like to call this the gospel according to Lynn. You don't have to believe me, but this is what I think. So if you're listening to the Lynn Show, this is what you're going to get. That you come into the world, each of us, with a little blueprint of what would be the very best way, the least stressful, the most in sync way for us to live that life. And if you're lucky, then you're born into an environment, a family, parents, siblings, a culture, a religious organization, a school, all those things that say, oh, yes, left-handed, how nice. Oh, yes, you have a quirky sense of humor. Good for you. Oh, yes, you love to read. Fine. Oh, yes. Oh, look how good you are with a ball. Yes, yes. Not that hand. This hand. No, don't make silly jokes. Stop reading. Go out and play. That's not funny. On and on and on. I'm imagining that some of you who are listening have heard some of those things said to you. And what happens when that is done is that all of us, to whom this would have happened, begin to not want to be what we are naturally. We all depend, I'm thinking here of the Tennessee Williams line, you know, we depend on Blanche DuBois, who depends on the kindness of strangers. We all depend on the kindness of our family and our friends and the people who surround our early childhood. We depend on that. That's not negotiable. We have to have it in order to survive. And so, if what we are naturally is not accepted, enjoyed, delighted, encouraged, we begin to think it's not a good thing. And we find ways to suppress it. And over time, we forget it, actually. But it doesn't go away. Our naturalness is still there, tugging on us. And whatever it is that we've been forced to do, maybe right and use our right hand, is never as good as what would have been if we were allowed to develop our natural inclination. And most people to whom this has happened feel out of sync, like a fraud, like there's something wrong, like if you really knew them, you wouldn't like them. And again, I'm sure that some of you who are listening have experienced some of this. And all that is, and I don't mean to diminish this as though it's a simple thing, but all it is that somehow you have been forced to deny what is natural to you. You are not living the life you were meant to live. The Lynn Show is about making this point, about saying over and over and over again, and if you listen to the show, you will have heard it over and over and over again, that if any of those things that I just said sound familiar to you, if you ever have felt out of sync or flawed or as though you're at odds with yourself or as if they really knew you, they would, you know, the old Woody Allen line, you know, and I wouldn't want to belong to any club that would have me, you know, something wrong with me. The chances are good what that means is that there is a you in there who you are denying, and that you is the real you, and when you are able to surface that real you and live the life you were meant to live, you will feel better. You will feel whole. Dare I say, joyful. Well, to make this point, I wrote a book, and of course if you've been listening, you know the book is When You Can, You Will. And should you be interested in the book or going into therapy with me, I do all of my psychotherapy on the phone now, so you don't have to live nearby me. You can get information about this, about the book, about psychotherapy on the phone. You can listen to all my past shows. You can listen to the interviews, one of which I'm going to do in a minute or so, by going up, of course, on my website. You can even get me to come and speak to your group or organization by clicking on Contact Me and saying, I have a question, I have a comment, please come and talk to my group, I want to talk to you on the phone, please send me your book, any of those things. The website. TheLynnShow.com, TheLynnShow, and you really have to put in TheLynnShow.com, because now there are the other The Lynn Shows, and they're not me. So, the other thing I do to make the point about living the life you were meant to live is playing interviews I've done with people who make their living or their life with an art. Because it's so difficult to make a living or a life with an art in our culture, that people who do it because it is who they really are. And when you listen, you can hear it. And as I always say, I hope be inspired to search, if you are not living the life you are meant to live, to search for what you are in denial for. So today I am playing an interview with Barry Ayres, who has been living the life he is meant to live since he was 2. That was the very first time he was on stage, although not the very first time he was singing. The stage was the church. He and his older brother, who he very quickly told not to appear with him anymore. You can hear it. It's an adorable story. They appeared in church singing a song in harmony with accompaniment taught to them by their mother and their aunt. And Barry never looked back. This is a story of a man who knew from that minute that this was what he was meant to do, and pursued it, and is pursuing it, and is bringing pleasure and joy to everyone who has seen him sing, dance, act, or been the recipient of a play he has choreographed, written, or directed. Anyway, he's charming, delightful, exuberant, and when you hear Barry talk, you know you are listening to a man who is living the life he was meant to live. So here, Barry Ayres. Okay, I'm here with Barry Ayres in the quietest place we could find in the Players Theater. So I'm just explaining to Barry that I interview people who make their living or their life with an art.
Yes.
And I don't know all there is to know about you, but what I do know about you suggests that you make your life, certainly, and much of your living with a number of arts.
100%.
100%.
Everything I do is art-based.
Okay, so how would you define yourself?
How long do you have on tape? I'm an actor, singer, dancer, director, choreographer, writer, composer, lyricist, stage manager, sound technician, janitor.
Okay, so theater person, because all
Absolutely.
Of that's really theater, right?
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah, great. Okay, mm-hmm. All right. And I only ask one question, mm-hmm. and that is, how did it start? When was the very first moment in your life that it occurred to you that you would want to dance or sing or act or play? Or
it's a very simple answer for me. I was 12 years old. I saw a community theater production of A Chorus Line. In that one evening in the theater, I learned so much about myself. I learned that people actually make a living singing and dancing. I didn't realize that. Not that it was a foreign concept to me, it's just I didn't realize people actually did that for a living. I realized a lot of social issues about who I was as a human being and who and how the rest of the world could see me. I learned that, you know, I was okay for wanting to do all this, that it was fine. And that's
that
my
it
story.
Was normal, that it
that
was
people
not
actually did this.
Did this, right. Yeah. Okay. So sometime before that you knew that you liked to sing, liked to dance. Do you remember where that started?
I started singing when I was 2 in church. Everything was very all my performance experience was church and school based.
So 2 in church. How exactly did that happen?
My mother, my whole family sang. My mother's father, my maternal grandfather, was a Southern Baptist preacher, and he sang to his congregation as well as preached. And then my mother was in several singing groups, professional gospel singing groups, as a soloist, is also and also a member of smaller groups. And that's how I grew up. I was always around music. My mother's sister, my aunt, she was a pianist as well as a singer. She had a record deal, a country record deal for a while, but she never really, she got more into gospel and that kind of stuff. So.
Okay, but still, when you say you sang in church, do you mean along with the congregation or they had
no,
you
no,
up front?
No, no, I was up front at 2.
How?
On a microphone.
Well, I mean, you do know that not all 2-year-olds, even those who go to church.
I guess, but I for me, it was, in my family, it was expected in a way.
How did you get up there? They said, our son wants to sing, or?
My aunt and my mom taught me and my brother a song, and we did it in front of the church.
Ah, okay. What was the song? Do you remember?
Yes. I don't remember the name of it, but it had something to do with walking that lonesome valley.
And you and your brother?
My brother.
Older than you, I'm assuming.
4 years older, mm-hmm. Born on the same day, September 3rd.
Wow, wow. So, a cappella?
No, with accompaniment.
Accompaniment? Mm-hmm. And
my aunt was on the piano.
Of course. And in unison or harmony?
Oh, no, we had harmony.
Of course you did.
And right? I took the upper harmony.
Did you?
Yes.
Even as a 2-year-old?
I've always had an ear for music. I mean, it's just something that's, I think, literally ingrained in me. It was always my instinct to harmonize. Anytime I would hear anything on the radio, I would find the harmony part.
Wow. Okay, so you were really born with it.
Yes.
Born in it. And yes. And so on stage, at least for perhaps for the first time, at 2.
Yes.
And then this is the singing part anyway.
Yes, the singing part. And the in a sense, the acting part, because you're up and you're performing. Mm-hmm. A performance thing, I guess. Less acting, but more performance. Mm-hmm. Learning how to, you know, work an audience. Mm-hmm. You know, it's some of those things are very ingrained.
And, well, do you remember the first time
no.
it occurred to you that you were working an audience?
Well, I don't remember the first time, but I remember thinking probably at like 7 or 8, oh, if I smile or if I, you know, give a little wink, mm-hmm. like the audience goes crazy. And this
seven
is a
or
church
eight, right?
audience.
And this is a church audience.
Yes.
Very great. So it just started at 2, mm-hmm. but there were encores. There
oh,
were
goodness, yes.
Every Sunday? Once in a while? At a
I would say 3 to 4 times a month. You
so,
know,
so.
Because we went to church on, we were Baptists, so we went to church on Sunday morning, Sunday evening, and Wednesdays.
Okay, and your mother and your aunt continued to teach you songs to do, or?
I began learning my own after that. And once I realized kind of what I was doing, I would listen to a song and then try to.
And were these religiously influenced
yes,
all?
Yes.
So where did you hear them?
From other people singing them, or there was also a radio station that played Christian music.
Ah, okay. And so did you always perform with your brother, or you started
no,
to do solo?
No, I didn't want to perform with my brother anymore after the first.
And why not?
I felt like I did better alone.
And did he mind?
No, because he was never more really the performer type. He was more into sports.
I see. So you got center stage.
Very much.
Okay. Yeah. And, okay, so this is singing.
Yes.
And dancing?
I began, well, initially, And again, being Baptist, we weren't encouraged to dance mm-hmm. because that was of the devil.
Right. So, oh my God.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Thinking of who you are.
Exactly.
And what that must have been like for you.
Well, it didn't faze me at the time because I didn't realize there was anything else.
Right.
I then began dancing when I was around, I think, 6, because my mother, when I was born, my feet were turned in. And so the doctor said he can either wear a brace to turn his feet out or you can put him in ballet class.
Wow.
And my mom decided ballet class because it was less expensive and it was also less obtrusive to my life.
You know, well, and did she know that it was going to be your life?
Exactly. And I'm very, very, very glad she did.
Of course.
Because, you know, I've been able to make a living.
Yeah, you're a wonderful dancer, my God, and choreographer. So, so at 6, because whatever powers that be set your feet back.
Exactly. I think it was all predetermined.
Oh, my God, know. Sure. Exactly. And because otherwise it's unlikely that you would have been able
yes.
to, right?
Yes.
So you were in ballet at 6.
Yes. And then, like every boy, I started taking tap because, you know, boys tap.
More boy
yeah.
thing, right?
And once my feet were my legs and my bones were kind of formed and everything kind of straightened itself out, then I started taking other forms of dance.
And did anybody mind? I mean, did they say, well, your feet are okay now, you don't have to do that anymore?
Yes, actually, now that I think about it, because I played, because my brother did, I played t-ball, which is, you know, the precursor to baseball. But I think you're only supposed to play it for a year before you go into, like, the regular. I played it for 3 years, and I still wasn't interested in it, because my mother kept saying, you know, oh, you'll
give it another shot, right?
Yeah, so it just wasn't my thing.
So she was trying to move you from dance to sport.
She was trying to make me, I guess, be more mainstream.
Sure, you know, mainstream boy.
Boy, and I've always been a very, I guess confident is the right word, but a secure person. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't really care if anybody else, you know, if other boys weren't doing what I was doing. That didn't bother me, so.
I can do that.
Yeah. Yeah, right? Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, so now we have you by 8, 9, 10. Mm-hmm. You're already singing and dancing.
Yes.
And you know that this is important to you.
Yes.
Right? And then at 14, you see Chorus Line, and it comes together for you as, oh, my God, I can
exactly.
actually have this as a life.
Right.
And that there are people in the world who are like me.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And, yeah, absolutely.
And that kind of thing. Okay, amazing. Okay, so you're 14, but you're still living in a Baptist home.
Yes. Still singing at this point, very involved in church, actually, I was 12. But so very involved in the church, very involved in singing. I was the leader of the youth choir. And then I I started looking into, because I knew I wanted to go to school, because I felt like I wasn't prepared to actually just go to Broadway, and that's what the goal was. So I knew I had to go to school, so I started looking into musical theater programs for colleges.
At 12?
At 12, yes. It made sense to me at the time.
It makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Yes, no, I mean, it makes perfect sense. It's just not common.
Right. So I found three different schools that I knew had a musical theater major. And that was always my goal, is to go to school for musical theater. And then,
did you tell your family, or did you just keep this as a, we'll let them know when they need
Well, it was kind of like, it wasn't a secret, but I never really talked about it.
Right.
Because I would, instead of like, you know, going to, you know, the movies or something, I would go in my room and make up choreography.
Of course.
And I would say to my mom, you know, I'm going to go dance for a little bit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'd be loud and turn the music up and jump around and be silly and make up choreography to Broadway shows. And
mm-hmm,
it
mm-hmm.
was just, okay, you know, whatever he wants.
Okay, so you didn't see a show until Chorus Line?
I had seen Annie and Grease.
Ah, but Chorus Line is what really caught.
Chorus Line is what kind of clinched it for me. And then I couldn't get enough of musical theater. So.
Yeah. Well, Chorus Line, it's just gypsies, right? It's all about singing and dancing.
It's all about singing and dancing and what people have to do to
get there. To do it, right. Yeah. Okay, good. So you're still in the church.
Yes.
And you have your eye on the prize.
Yes.
Which is one of those three colleges.
Yes.
But you still have to go to junior high school and to high school, right?
Well, I think, again, divine intervention took over in where I grew up, in Polk County, Florida. They opened a performing arts high school. So, literally, my eighth grade, when I was in eighth grade going into ninth grade, that ninth grade would have been the first year of this performing arts high school.
Right.
And I knew that that's where I had to be. So, and it was no choice. I mean, I had to go to that school. So,
and
I went there the very first year it opened.
Well, I'm just, wait. I understand that you had to go there.
Yes.
You didn't get any pushback from your family?
Honestly, the worst part was that it was in a town like three towns away. So they would have to get up at 5:45
to get me there,
right. Or to get me at least to the bus.
Right.
And that was the
They didn't like that part.
They didn't like that part.
But they did it for you.
Yeah, of course.
Well, you're saying of course, but,
well,
you know, I've heard lots of stories where that isn't the truth.
Exactly. I cannot stress enough that I had an incredibly supportive family life. And it was really whatever you want to do. It's like, we support you, whatever you want to do. If this is what you want, fine. If you want to be a dentist tomorrow, that's okay too.
Yeah, that's, I quite often find myself saying, there's nothing more important than that.
Yeah, absolutely.
It makes all the difference. And lots of people don't get it, you know.
Right.
Especially if they want to do what you wanted to do, and especially if they come from some kind of conservative religious background.
Right.
Quite often, they get quite the opposite of what you got.
It's funny, though, and later in my life, in my mid to late 20s, fast-forwarding quite a bit, but...
Well, I'm going to want to wander up there, so why don't
okay.
we... Right, yeah, right. Right, okay, so essentially, Deus Ex Machina, and they put a performing arts school in your town,
yes.
Right?
Yes,
And you're the first year in it.
Yes.
And you're already a little star in your community.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So you must have been in hog heaven, as they say.
It was great.
Yeah.
My high school experience was incredible. I was one of the most popular kids from day one.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knew me. I was also one of the very few, literally, like, I think, of six guys in the program. You know, because...
So, and not only that, but it was small.
Yes, very small.
Yeah.
Very small. I think
it's astonishing that they wanted to do that. You wouldn't think there'd be that big a population that would be using it.
It's certainly grown at this point and nowadays, but at the time, I think there were 120 kids in the program initially.
Wow. So you had so much attention.
So much attention. It was also a great learning experience for me, too, just in the sense of socially, because being around other kids that were like me, mm-hmm. that wanted the same things, that had these ideas, it was finally some kind of social recognition that, you know, other people are like this, too.
Yeah.
Besides,
right.
you know, seeing it on stage, but like
getting
to know people that are that involved, that will go home and make up choreography in their bedroom.
Right. Well, yeah, the experience of finding like-minded people there's really no way to overestimate how important that is.
Right.
It's a confirmation.
Absolutely.
You know, and also a relief, I imagine.
Well, I think too. I mean, in a sense that. You know, as being a family, you know, being in a family, you expect, or at least mostly expect, your family to accept you for who you are. That's not always the case, but in my case, it was very much that. But then to find people who didn't know you for 14 years at this point.
And don't love you.
And don't have to.
Right.
And
they do anyway.
And they do anyway.
Yeah,
it's a great thing.
Yeah, and of course it launches you. It tells
of
you
course.
in your DNA, I can do that.
Right? It's funny. I was having this discussion with a friend last night. I grew up very confident, and I think that my mother and my parents, I will say, definitely instilled that in me. And my brother, we were very confident young men, and men. No, I guess a lot of people aren't raised that way.
No, a lot, many/most.
Yeah, and I'm certainly happy that I'm that way.
Grateful?
Because I have to, very grateful. Because I, you know, never really had to deal with a lot of the anxiety of who I am or being who I am or...
what will they think?
What will people think of me? I've always had the confidence of, I don't really care if you don't like me or not. I'm still me.
So. Yeah, it's wonderful. It's wonderful, and you were amazingly lucky. You go through. God, Lynn, get those words out. Right, the performing arts high school.
Yes.
And do you get into one of the three?
Yes.
Yes. Which one?
My number one school, which was the University of Cincinnati College Conservatory of Music, mm-hmm. and they have, they're among the top five musical theater programs in the country, performance, and. I not only got in, I was one of, I think there were 15,000 applicants, and I was one of 12,
yeah.
Which, you know, was great.
It's great, but again, it's saying to you over and over again, you know, you can do this,
yeah,
you can do
yeah.
this, this is yours.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm just curious, because you listed this long list of things that you can do, where did you learn some of those things?
Well, my entire experience leading up to that really kind of set me in the direction of where my life is now, in the sense that when I was in the church, I would have to lead the choir. So I learned how to play piano so I could lead the choir, mostly by ear. My aunt, who played, also gave me a few lessons and then gave me a chord piano chart. So I learned how to play chords. And then from there, I learned how to read music. And then when I was in high school, I took theory and piano classes.
Okay, so that explains some of the
yes.
music writing, the composing,
yes.
and the lyricizing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Lyricizing?
Sure. It's an exercise.
Yeah, right.
So that's the part of the music. And again, music has always been a huge part of my life. As far as dancing goes, being a boy... within, you know, usually a class full of girls, I always had a, partner, and then...
Yeah, you were in demand.
Right. So I was always dancing, and people always wanted me, so I was learning different styles, everything from, you know, obviously starting with ballet to modern hip-hop, I was also given... Because of my dance skills and what I had, you know, been through dance class-wise, I started choreographing for my show choir in high school and then other show choirs.
You had all those choreographed moves that you'd had in the bedroom that you could read
right,
out
exactly,
to his friend.
Exactly.
Of course, you were already ready.
Exactly. And those, you know, again, one thing led to another, and I started actually working in high school professionally as a choreographer for other show choirs and school musicals.
Well, the church did good by you.
The church did very good by me. Very good.
Well, okay, so you got in mm-hmm. to the conservatory.
And I, my freshman year was the very first time I actually had an acting class.
Wow.
I'd never taken an acting class.
Not even in performance high school?
I'd done, like, musicals. I'd done roles. I'd done lead roles.
Yes.
But I've never had an acting class.
Right. Wow.
And it was very foreign to me.
I'll bet that was...
It was very shocking. And being a confident person and...
And thinking you knew everything.
I know everything.
I can see it coming.
It was very difficult for me.
Yeah, I bet you were...
Because you have to open up yourself so much. And I literally remember telling my teacher my freshman year, this is like, I'm going to have to go to therapy after this. Because, I mean, I don't see how this is going to make me a better actor to tell you about my childhood, my horrible childhood.
You remember... You remember the song from Nothing, right?
Of course, yes.
Right.
Yes. In many ways, and what I love about Of Course Line, in many ways, it has reflected my entire life.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
Well, you were set up in a way to find that very difficult.
Yes,
and
but
all the things that were good,
right.
worked against.
In that sense, absolutely.
Right.
But I also remember the day, and I mean this so sincerely, I remember the day that the only word or phrase I can use is that it sunk in, that I got it.
You got it.
And I was doing a scene, and I remember thinking, like in my head thinking, okay, what am I going to do now? And then all of a sudden, I had this instinct to do something, and I did it. And literally, my teacher threw up her hands and started shouting, that's it, And I felt it, because it was like, I didn't have to think anymore. I wasn't thinking about, what am I going to do?
You were it.
Was it.
Yeah.
I just was.
Yeah.
And that's when it sunk in for me.
Okay, so you were able to benefit from the classes.
Absolutely.
Right, right.
Absolutely.
Right, because a lot of people can't.
Yeah.
They can't let go of the security of that thing that they came in with, right?
And that's exactly right. It's about letting go and letting the character take over.
Yeah.
And the character's intentions. And once I was able to, and it wasn't like I had to understand it. I couldn't, I don't think it's a logical process that you can say, this is step one, this is step two. It's something that you literally feel.
You know what this reminds me of? There's in the book, A Stranger in Strange Land, they have the concept of grokking.
Uh-huh.
You grok it. It's not intellectual.
Right, right. Right. Yeah, and that's exactly right. So once it sunk in for me, I got it.
Okay, so now we have, and the other things like lighting design and scene design and janitorial work and all that stuff.
College.
You've got all that stuff in college,
yeah.
Right? Yeah. Okay.
And it's an incredibly expansive program in the sense that you're basically a triple major, and it's a conservatory, so that's all you focus on.
Right, right.
Dance, singing, and acting major. I think we were on the quarter system instead of like semesters, so in my senior year, my spring quarter was my smallest credit hours, and I had 21 credit hours.
Wow.
So it was a very
intense
program.
Right. But, forgive me, do you mind saying how old you are now?
I'm 37.
Okay. You're 37, and you have...
And I just had the realization, like, probably a month ago, excuse me for interrupting,
yeah,
that it's been 15 years since I graduated college. And that hit me like a ton of bricks.
Oh, wait. Wait, wait. But what I'm thinking is, you have what seems to be a rather inexhaustible found something of energy. I can hardly imagine what you were like in college. I mean, you know, you must have been able to run on nothing.
I was.
Right.
Yeah.
So, right. So, and you haven't lost that. Or at least you haven't lost...
I did for a while.
Did you? Well, okay. So now we got to the 20s, and you were going to say, right? Yeah, go ahead.
I, coming right out of college, I had some really great experiences. One of the great things about the program in Cincinnati is you do a showcase for agents in your senior year, and I was very luckily signed to an agent right out of college.
Wow.
Got my first off-Broadway show literally 6 weeks after I finished college. That, again, was kind of disappointing. It ran two performances and closed.
Oh, well.
Right. Sorry. And then within 6 days, I had a national tour.
Wow.
So, but then... That's kind of when everything fell apart. I had an injury, and ironically, I was on the national tour of A Chorus Line, and I had an injury, and things kind of really... I don't know how to explain it other than I had to step back from my life, and I don't know. It's hard. It was a very difficult time.
It sounds like you crashed.
I crashed completely.
What was the injury, do you mind?
I tore my ACL, my right knee, anterior cruciate ligament.
So essentially what that meant was you could not do that, right? You couldn't do what you had been defined as.
Correct.
From two.
Correct.
So...
And I thought I literally thought my life was over because and it wasn't even that bad. I mean, yeah, I tore this ligament, but... Because it was such a part of my life, because I couldn't do anything for 2 months, I couldn't even walk for 3 weeks. It was a really hard time, and because I defined myself so much as who that person is.
Yeah.
It
forces you to the existential question:
mm-hmm.
Who am I without this?
Right.
And
I didn't know.
Well, how would you? I mean, as you know, as I said before, you had this identity essentially from two.
Yeah.
And you didn't have to question it or wonder about it or anything for 20 years. And then suddenly it's not there. I mean, who would not have a difficult time, right?
Right.
Right. So, so how long did it take you, and do you know how you survived it?
Well, to be quite frank, mm-hmm. it took me about 6 years mm-hmm. to kind of get through that.
Wow.
It was hard. It was difficult. And I tried to mask a lot of it with different things.
I'm sure.
And,
So essentially, I mean, you can stop me. We don't have to, you know, you don't have to answer any questions.
No, I don't mind.
No, well,
this is my favorite topic.
And just as long, okay, good. As long as you know, it's not.
No, I'm not trying to get all dark and morbid or anything either.
But I don't. The theme of the Lynn Show is living the life you were meant to live.
Mm-hmm.
And I interview people who make their living or their life with an art because. In order to do that, it has to be who you really are.
Yeah.
And the how you do that, mm-hmm. how you arrive at that, how you maintain that, it's all important for me. So I don't care about dark and morbid.
Sure.
That's okay with me.
Right. And again, I think that I had to go through that to be a more complete person. I felt like in many ways, if I didn't go through a dark period and go through stupid mistakes of my early 20s and drugs and alcohol and all that stupidness, that I wouldn't be a better person now in my 30s. And I look back on so much of my life was based on what I did, I look back and think, how real was any of that? And now I can say, I mean, I'm a better person for it. I'm glad I went through it, and I'm glad I'm past it.
And I'm glad to be talking to you on the other end of it.
Yes, exactly.
But I do think that that's a really important point to make, that as important as one's work is, and for artists, you know, it is who you are.
It really is.
Not what you do, really. It's who you are. To have an identity that's separate from that,
yes.
It's essential to your survival.
Right.
And if you were lucky enough, it's an ironic kind of balance, right? If you were lucky enough not to have to ask that question for 20 years,
right.
Then when you have to ask that question, that's a big deal.
Yeah, it is.
And some people don't survive that. They can't find a person separate from, right?
Yeah.
So congratulations.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And, okay, so for 6 years, mm-hmm. you try lots of things to not answer the question.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
And then apparently you find a way to be okay with being buried?
Yes. Yes, I did. Regardless of all that, I still worked in the meantime, and I had done a wonderful show in L.A. that I kind of, what brought me back to life in a sense is that I got a chance to do that same show in New York, and I was very proud of the work that I did in that show. And I had done the show on and off for about 5 years.
What was it?
It's called Naked Boy Singing.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I did it. I did the final cast at the Actors Playhouse in Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I was glad to be able to do a show off Broadway, A, that ran.
No, it ran and ran and ran.
And I loved doing that show. It became, I guess if I had to say that, you know, before anything now, it became what I was most known for. Because I, again, toured the show for a long time. I opened the Chicago company. I opened the Boca Raton company. I opened a company in Rio. So I was always the first person that they would send out, which, you know, again, I love the show, love doing the show. And kind of what brought me back to life is when I got to do it in New York. And it was also my return to New York in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had been away for so long, and I felt like, you know, I'm back, and
yeah.
I'm back good, and I'm in a healthier place.
And you survived the dark night
yes.
of the soul.
Yes, and when I was in New York, my former demons began to reappear, and I could actually deal with them and say, no, I'm good, you know, I don't need that, you know.
Thanks
I can go have
much.
A glass of wine for you with
right,
you, but
right.
I'm not going to go in the bathroom.
Right. Thanks very much.
Yes.
Been there, done that.
Exactly.
Right. Threw out the T-shirt. Right. Okay.
I think I lost the T-shirt somewhere, actually.
Good. Probably you passed it on.
Exactly.
What it is.
Unfortunately,
right.
Yes.
Yes, right. Okay, so how did you wind up in Sarasota?
My mother, was diagnosed with cancer. And again, not to get morbid or sad, she's in remission now. Everything's fine. She actually has fought cancer twice. This is the second time. And I was in New York. I had some issues. The producers of Naked Boys were going to send it to another theater and to make it a different kind of equity contract. We went from an off-Broadway production contract to a 99-seat theater contract, which is going from $786 a week to $56 per show. Yes. Right. You may want to beep out Actors Equity because I have issues with the union.
Everybody does.
But, and the union didn't tell us. The producers told us, and the union had already agreed. Mm. So, it was the right timing. I was like, I've done New York, I'm happy, you know, I could stay here, but my mom's sick, so let me go down. And then I went and did an equity production of West Side Story in Orlando, stayed on there, and did three more contracts with that theater. And then that theater that I was working at in Orlando literally closed after the three hurricanes, the Charlie, Francis,
right.
Ivan. And then my friend had gotten a job at the Golden Apple, and they needed boy dancers for Chicago, and said, you know, brought me down. And I auditioned for them literally in an afternoon and started rehearsals a month later.
When was that?
That was November of 2004.
That wasn't the Bill Hayes one.
No, that was
the one
prior.
Before.
And then I also did the Bill Hayes one. Yeah.
Okay, so now?
So now I'm in Sarasota.
Yes, and what's your title here now? You have a title
here.
Here
at the Players, I'm actually doubly billed. I am for the school, I'm the director of music. And for the theater itself, I'm the production manager.
And you direct and you choreograph and
yes.
You do all of it, then you teach, you do everything that you do.
Yes.
Right?
I'm able to literally use every aspect of what I've learned in my 37 years and in every day of my life, I'm able to use every aspect of
That's
what
great.
I've been doing. It's great. It's awesome.
Few people can say this.
I cannot think of a better place for me to be in right now.
Oh, that's wonderful. Okay, so the only other question I ask is, having dedicated 37 years to this work, is there anything you would want to say about it?
There's nothing I would take to change anything. I mean, it's great. It's a solitary life, I will say that.
Let's talk about that a little.
This is just me, but I don't have time. Anytime I have free time, I want to spend it how I want to see, and that has always been an
making
issue
up,
in any relationship.
Making up choreography.
Yeah, yeah. Or sleeping. honestly, especially
yeah,
now
right.
that I'm older.
Right.
Just getting rest, and I'm at least honest with myself to know that I'm selfish. And I don't really want to share.
Well, in a way, your whole life led to that. I mean, you know, beginning with, I don't think I want to sing with my brother.
Right, exactly.
You know.
Exactly.
Right?
I think in many ways the artist's life is a little solitary because so much of what you pull from is within yourself.
Well, and it is a kind of choice always, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know,
it is.
And the work is compelling. There's
yeah.
no question about
yeah.
it. And in order to do it as well as you do it, it requires much, if not most, of your energy.
Well, and again, not to be egotistical, but I get more from hundreds of people than I do from one. And I don't mean that to sound as bad as it does, but I can stand on stage and or sit on the audience and watch something that I've put on that stage and get and become more fulfilled than somebody telling me, one person saying, I love you, you did well. That's
well, but what's wonderful about that is the fact that you know what it is that you want and need, and
yes.
you're not trying to be someone you're not.
Exactly.
You know? And that, of course, is what the Lincho is all about. My God, I could hardly be. You're the role model. You're the poster child, right?
The Lincho. That's great. Well, thanks.
You're welcome. All right. So the next step in terms of directing is the Plaid thing, right?
I'm doing a Plaid. I'm directing and choreographing Plaid Tidings at the Manatee Players,
which opens November
29th.
Okay, and they only run like 2 weeks or something.
They are actually running 4 weeks, and it runs through December 23rd.
Oh, okay.
It's the holiday show.
Okay. Do you know what's up next for you, or?
I'm very much involved here at the Players of Sarasota. With the senior group. I'm the director and choreographer and musical director of the senior group. It's called Sarasota Silver Stars. And we have our big show in March. And this year it's called Tiny Bubbles. We're basing it on a Lawrence Welk show. It's fun. But, of course, my take on a Lawrence Welk show.
I'm sorry.
Well, we're going through the decade, so we're literally starting at the turn of the century with doing an Easter parade, going all the way through modern day times, with ending with a Lady Gaga song. So it's
my
interpretation.
Oh my God, that's great!
Yeah.
That's great. Well, okay, and when does that open? March.
March, sometime in.
Oh,
March.
We'll call the Players Theater.
Yes.
And come out and see, come out and see Barry Ayres' work, because it's remarkable.
Thank you.
And thank you very much.
So there you have it. As I said, Barry Ayres. The living, breathing embodiment of living the life you were meant to live. As I said to Barry, he is the poster child for this, for the Lincho, for the my desire to demonstrate what it sounds like when someone is actually living the life they were meant to live. And Barry makes a point at the end of the show, which I think is so important, and that is that when you are living the life you were meant to live, that may not be the life that others think you should be living. It may not be the life that others want you to live. Others might criticize you or be jealous of you or want something from you that you can't give them. That is, in fact, accurate. That's part of the price of often of living the life you were meant to live. And it's a trade-off, actually. You can live the life others want you to live, pleasing others, living up to others, impressing others, and feeling when you get home at night that something is terribly wrong. Or you can live the life you were meant to live and accept the fact that others may not approve, may want you to be different, may criticize you, may, as I said, want something from you that you cannot give and still be living the life you were meant to live. And Barry not only describes that very clearly, but he demonstrates that one can do that. One can make the choice and be at peace with the choice, even when there is the price of not being who everybody else is, who everybody else might want you to be. I'm grateful to him for that. So you can see Barry's work by going to Manatee Players and seeing his direction of Plaid Tidings at the Manatee Players Christmas show, or you can see what he makes of Sarasota Stars doing Lawrence Welk in March at the Players of Sarasota. If you go up on my website and ask me for more information about Barry Ayres, I will tell you more things that he's doing. And also on my website, remember, thelinshow.com. Don't leave the E out of Lynn or the .com out of the Lynn Show. But if you wanted to go up there, you could find, as I said, my book. You could email me and ask me questions or comment on the show. You can listen to this interview, this show again, and all of the interviews and shows I've done. They're all up there in podcast. Now, I'm going to go out on a track of Barry singing New York State of Mind. It's not a good track. The audio is not good. But because it's the only thing I've got, I really wanted you to hear a little of not only the talent, but the passion of Barry Ayres. And you can hear it in this if you ignore the bad audio. So I'm not going to play all of it, but I will play enough of it for you to get a sense of it. And up on my website, you can also get the indomitable Josh Hackney, without whom I couldn't do anything that I do, because Josh gets me the technology, he teaches me how to use it. When I have forgotten, he shows me again, he fixes and creates everything I use. And if you need help with any of that stuff, computer, electronics, recording, iPhone, you want Josh Hackney, and you can also get him on my website. So before I play Barry Ayres singing New York State of Mind, I want to say, as always, I hope you got something from this show that you can use. Something you didn't know, something you knew but had forgotten, something that brings you back. Because as always, I will be back next week, same time, same station, and I sure hope you will be too.
Like to get away, take a holiday from the neighborhood. Hop a flight to Miami Beach for the Hollywood. I'm taking a Greyhound on the Hudson River.
I'm getting older, my hair is turning gray. Oh, you see my face and figure I've both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring, I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go. My shot, my time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly, well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go. From the ashes, every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang, so...